House Committee on Consumer Business Affairs, meeting June 4th, 1985. We're in hearing room F at 1 p.m.
With a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 884. Tom, you don't need to read all this to us, can you just summarize the bill real quickly?
Primarily, Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Tom Augustine, President of the Oregon Credit Union League. Primarily, what the bill does is to give the Board of Directors of Credit Unions the authority to establish different classes of share accounts. Currently, we are only allowed by law to have a share account and a share draft account. What it does also do is clean up some of the existing language that is no longer needed in the Act that was in the bill in 1975 when it was recodified, such as starting up the share insurance fund and things of that nature. One of the things that it will allow is for us to create what we would call a membership share, which would be the qualifying share for membership in a credit union. Today, all somebody has to do is deposit $5 or a share, and they become a member. With this new qualifying share, it would allow us to build capital. Currently, the only way we can build capital is out of undivided earnings or, net earnings. This way would just help us to ease that situation and I think become much more solid and secure.
Okay. Questions by committee members? Have you had a chance to look over the bill? Any questions at all?
Move adoption of the...
Okay, the hearing is closed. We're in work session on Senate Bill 884.
I move adoption, Mr. Chairman, of the bill.
To the floor. The representative side moves the Senate Bill 884 be sent to the House floor with due pass recommendation. Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Sine?
Aye.
Ekins?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
McTeague?
Aye.
Chair Scoot?
Aye. Motion passes. Chuck, would you like to carry it? Okay, we're now in a hearing, public hearing on, what's your bill, Senator Hammond?
813.
Senate Bill 813. Okay, Andy, this is your microbrewery bill also. If you have the good graces of that.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, apologize for being late here. I'm in the Medic Committee down the hallway here, and it's crazy today. For the record, my name is Len Hannon, State Senator, District 26. A group of legislators, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, introduced this bill at the request of the Edinburgh Lodge in Ashland, which is a bed and breakfast facility. What this bill does, it's very simple. It establishes a bed and breakfast wine and beer license for an annual fee of $5 per guest unit. Currently, some of the beer and wine licenses can run, I believe, it's $250 a year. What this is trying to do is provide a service to these tourist communities who, in fact, have these facilities. As far as I'm aware of, in the Senate side, there was no opposition to the bill, and I would strongly urge various members to adopt the bill and pass it on if possible.
Okay, Mr. Gervais, anything to add?
Just a couple of quick comments, Representative Schoon, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Gervais, and I represent the unique Northwest Country Inns. While I do not represent all the bed and breakfasts in the state of Oregon, I represent an organization that does encompass many of them, and it's a like kind of consideration and concern, and it's our feeling that this piece of legislation would be very beneficial to a bed and breakfast operator who, on occasion, for instance, when the guests are arriving in the afternoon or evening, would like to leave a decanter of wine out for them to partake in or offer them a beer or a glass of wine. Under the present law, they cannot do that unless they get a full-blown tavern license or a license of that nature. This creates one that isn't so expensive as to be prohibitive to this kind of operation.
Okay, thank you. Questions by committee members? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Smith from OLCC, You could indicate by nodding your head whether or not you have any opposition to this, and if you do, please come forward to testify.
I'm sorry, sir, I couldn't hear you.
Do you have any opposition to this, Bill?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other witnesses to testify on Senate Bill 813? If not, the hearing is closed, and we're in work session on Senate Bill 813. Representative Anderson?
I have been in contact with Senator Hannon, and he agrees with a proposal to attach some further legislation to this bill, commonly known as a microbrewery bill. You have before you Legislative Council draft of Senate Bill 813-2, which is a all parties involved that I'm aware of, all the way from beer and wine wholesalers to those who are involved, and some five or six people at least who are presently involved in getting up and running with microbreweries as some investments. I would move to amend Senate Bill 813 with the amendments dash 2 dated 6-4-85.
Okay, Representative Anderson moves that the dash 2 amendments dated 6-4-85 be inserted into Senate Bill 813. Discussion, Representative Anderson?
There is a, you will note that there is one insertion different from the Legislative Council, that in line 3 we've inserted the word house, so it would read brewery public house license rather than brewery public license. Just to be aware of that. This bill passed the House once before and became stalled in the Senate. I believe that most of the objections on the Senate side we have taken care of with a redraft of this bill, and I believe it's a necessary piece of legislation. And I would urge the committee to adopt the amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Ickes.
I also think we ought to adopt the amendment. I think this started out as a very good bill, a very good concept, and something necessary, and unfortunately it's been caught up in unrelated issues, and I think we ought to try and keep it alive and give it a chance to get through this session and try again.
Further comments?
Ditto.
Okay. Representative Side indicates ditto.
Mr. Chair, the intent is that this is an additional language. It does not replace the bed and breakfast language. Mr. Chair, there's some question. I believe because of the fact that these people are up and running, some of them, that we should attach emergency clause. I believe it would be appropriate in this instance, and I'm sorry that my first reading of the draft, this final draft really was not too long, but I would amend my motion to include an emergency clause to Legislative Council dash 2.
Okay, let the record show that the motion includes the emergency clause. Further comments or questions?
I have a question.
Representative Linkless?
Just a question with respect to the emergency clause. If we put an emergency clause on it, the whole bill goes into effect. Or can we put an emergency clause just on a portion of the bill?
I think that we would not actually put an emergency clause on, but we would put an effective date for certain sections, which would have the same effect.
Okay.
Representative McKee?
My question to the maker of the motion to do this is, I'm aware that there's another bill moving through the process, a Senate bill that has had the Coors issue attached to it, as well as the microbrewery pub. Are we not duplicating our effort here, since that bill could very well pass the floor of the House?
Mr. Chair, Representative McTeague, that's a rather controversial bill, and both Senator Hannon and the sponsored microbrewery bill would rather stay out of the controversy. It's my recommendation, and I believe the instructions should be, upon passage of this, that the committee hold the bill for the full 72 hours before it goes to the clerk. Hopefully we'll have some indication by that time where the other bill is going. The other bill looks like it's clearing both sides. If not, we can again delay this for an additional 72 hours by merely bringing it back. I don't want this bill to have in effect one way or another upon the other bill. It may or may not, but I think this is good insurance. It's a very important bill, an economic development bill for several people who have invested quite a lot of money and will keep them up and running.
Other questions or comments? Representative Lindquist, did you want to make a motion to delete the to amend the motion to delete the emergency clause and have the effective date?
What would you want for a date?
Watch Senator Hannon, please.
Okay, Senator Hannon.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the reason I suggested the emergency clause is that I apologize for not detecting this earlier, but with the bed and breakfast, the current tourist season is well beginning, and this would allow the OLCC by administrative rule to adopt some license procedures to enact this, and that was my concern. As far as the microbrewery amendments, Mr. Chair, I certainly am supportive of that. I would rather that the other issue stand alone by itself.
Right. Mr. Chairman?
Question to Senator Hannon. Representative Vegas?
Well, it's not a question, but it seems that we should just put the emergency clause on the whole bill since for both purposes.
Yeah, I think it achieved the same goal.
Okay.
Be more effective, just do it that way.
Mr. Smith, would you please come forward? Please identify yourself for our record.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'm Dean Smith, Administrator, OLCC.
With an emergency clause, create any problems that you could not handle with regard to either issue?
Mr. Chairman, when I saw the emergency clause on the bed and breakfast bill, I didn't have any concern because I perceived there were very few of them. I don't know how many brew pub applicants we might get, but our only concern would be numbers coming in on us suddenly and us not being tooled up for it. I think I would defer to your judgment, just say we'd do the best we can.
Thank you very much. Okay, you've heard the motion. Further discussion? Okay, the motion is to adopt the Dash 2 amendments as further amended by including the emergency clause. The clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Ekus?
Aye.
Seitz?
Aye.
McTeague?
Aye.
Lindquist?
Aye.
Chair Schoon?
Aye. Motion passes. Representative Anderson?
Chair, move Senate Bill 813 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Discussion? The clerk will call the roll on the motion.
Anderson?
Aye.
Seitz?
Aye.
Ekus?
Aye.
Lindquist?
Aye.
McTeague?
Aye.
Schoon?
Aye. Motion passes. Representative Anderson, would you carry that bill?
I'd be glad to.
Thank you. Okay, we are now in public hearing on Senate Bill 804. Mr. Morris?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brad Morris with the Oregon Association of Realtors, and joining me today is Mr. Ray Shaw, our legal counsel, who would be happy to answer some of your questions. Senate Bill 804 is a new concept for Oregon, but is a concept that has been adopted in approximately 32 other states. And that's the creation of a real estate client security fund. And if I can, I'd like to briefly go through some prepared testimony to explain to you the features of the bill. We also have a section-by-section analysis for your information. But Senate Bill 804 establishes the Real Estate Client Security Fund for the payment in whole or in part any unpaid judgment against a real estate licensee for actual damages based upon a finding of fraud, deceit, or intentional misrepresentation or theft by the licensee in the course of the licensee's professional real estate activity. The Oregon Association of Realtors believes the public must be provided protection from the isolated incidents of an individual real estate licensee who, through the acts of fraud, deceit, or intentional misrepresentation or theft of funds, causes actual damages to a client. This protection to the public can be only provided by the creation of a real estate client security fund. The measure establishes the procedures to petition for an order for payment from the security fund for the actual unpaid damages included in the judgment. Provisions are also provided for the award of attorney fees, court, and other costs not to exceed 10% of the actual damages awarded, or $1,500, whichever is less. The bill establishes an assessment of $15 against each real estate licensee to create the fund. The assessment will only occur at the time of each initial licensing. Each licensing in a different category as a real estate licensee, for example, from a salesperson to a real estate broker, each reactivation of an inactive licensee and each license reinstatement, and each real estate licensee who has had a license before the effective date of this act. Additional assessments against the real estate licensee can only be levied by the real estate commissioner when the investment income cannot pay for the administrative costs of the fund and the fund principal would be less than $150,000. Other provisions of the measure include the fact that the funds are dedicated for real estate purposes only and are deposited with the state treasurer. All monies in the fund in excess of $300,000 shall be used by the real estate commissioner for the benefit of all real estate licensees and are subject to legislative approval for the expenditures. The filing of the petition against the fund must only occur after the termination of all proceedings in connection with the judgment. And it establishes a limitation for payment from the fund of $15,000 for all claims rising out of the same transaction, or $30,000 for the acts of a single licensee. It allows the real estate commissioner to spend up to $10,000, subject to legislative approval, to publicize the availability of the fund and requirements to potential claimants. The acts of a real estate licensee which are grounds for the petitioner to seek recovery from the fund must have occurred on or after July the 1st of 1985. However, it delays until July the 1st of 1986 the ability of a petitioner to file a claim against the fund but does not deny the claim. The purpose is to allow the fund to grow to an amount sufficient to pay potential claims against the security fund. Mr. Chairperson, members of the committee, Senate Bill 804 is responsible legislation supported by the industry and the Real Estate Commissioner to provide consumer protection to real estate clients, and we would urge your support for the bill. We would be happy to answer questions that you may have. The measure has been extensively reviewed in the Senate committee, passed the Senate unanimously, and we think it's an important measure to provide consumer protection for real estate clients. Okay, we'd be happy to answer questions.
Committee members.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Representative Lindquist.
Oh. Brad, has there been a problem?
There have been, Mr. Chairman, Representative Lindquist, there have been some isolated incidents that have occurred, principally through the auditing process of the Real Estate Commissioner's Office. They probably would be best able to respond to that question. Those incidents, which some have occurred earlier this year, were in part the catalyst for this particular proposal. Very isolated incidents.
If they're isolated incidents, isn't this kind of like penalizing all the realtors?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lindquist, it's in our judgment that a $15 assessment against real estate licensees which hopefully will be a one-time assessment only and will never occur again unless there's a category of license change, is a small price to pay for protection to the real estate clients who suffer actual cash damages from the isolated incidents of a wayward licensee. And we think that's responsible consumer protection, and we support it.
Another question?
Representative Lankwist?
I presume that the clients now have some kind of legal course of action that they can take.
I'm going to let our attorney respond to that.
Thank you, Brad. Mr. Chairman, my name is Ray Shaw. I am a lawyer in Salem, Oregon. One of my clients is the Oregon Association of Realtors. In answer to your question, Representative Lindquist, yes, there are avenues available to clients harmed by the activities of a real estate licensee. However, collectability is a problem. This bill goes more to collectability than legal recourse.
Well, if they collect, say, from this fund, do they then give up their right for private action?
No. As a matter of fact, Mr. Chairman, Representative Lindquist, the private action is a predicate, a foundation for recovery from the fund. Without the judgment, they cannot go to the fund. The second predicate is a lack of recovery from the private assets of the wrongdoer.
Further questions by committee members? Representative Sides?
Representative Anderson was first.
Representative Anderson, go ahead.
Thank you. Brad, what changes were made between the original bill and the engrossed bill?
One of the principal changes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, was in the area of the assessment against a real estate licensee. The bill, for example, as it was originally drafted, would have required an assessment of $15 at the time of each license renewal. And it was felt that that was an overkill and would generate more funds than would be needed. That was one of the principal amendments that occurred. The other amendments were principally housekeeping, as I recall.
No, Mr. Chair, really no subsidy change from the way it entered.
Not as I recall.
And I guess from that I have to take the correspondence I have in my file. The original bill would still hold.
Yes.
Further questions, Representative Sides?
Nice question.
Brad, this looks like one of those little slivers that get underneath and irritate somebody in terms of the way it's structured. I'm trying to get back to what Representative Lindquist was saying. I just don't see the need out there. Maybe you're not the one to answer that, but it's hard for me to envision why the industry itself would be bringing this upon itself.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sides, I guess if you are a client of a real estate licensee and through the acts of fraud, deceit, or intentional misrepresentation, you suffer an actual cash loss, an actual damages. You therefore go to the courts and secure a judgment against that licensee, and for whatever reason are unable to collect that licensee, and you lose $10,000 or $15,000 cash loss, you're going to say that there's a need. And that's what we're speaking of.
Well, but where do you stop? I mean, that's out there in the market. That's not only in your industry, but in every industry, there's a risk factor when you go and make a deal.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sides, and on the other side of the equation is, what is the responsibility of the industry to provide some element of protection to the consumer for the isolated acts of an individual licensee? And it's just simply going to question of which balances which. We as an industry believe that there is a need to provide this protection. That's why we're here in support of the measure. That's why.
If I can ask one more question, why did you pick $15?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sides, for a couple of reasons. One, it was the expectation that $15 from each of the actively licensed real estate licensees would probably generate sufficient funds to handle the issue and have monies available in the event of claims. Also, the $15 was expected to be an amount that was probably fair for all licensees. At one point in time, we were considering a different amounts between a salesperson and a broker, but we thought $15 was probably an average figure between the 10 and the 25, and it's probably the least painful amount.
Further questions?
Go ahead.
Representative
Lincoln. I'm going to show my ignorance now about the real estate, the requirements to become a real estate agent, broker, whatever. In order to be a real estate agent in the state, do they have to be bonded or anything like that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lindquist, there is not a bonding requirement, no.
Even though they're dealing with people's money and such?
There is not a bonding requirement, no.
Further questions?
Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Maybe I missed, but did you in your testimony say how many real estate licenses there were in the state?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, as I recall, figures...
13 or 15?
15,000.
Further questions? Representative Anderson. Okay, thank you very much.
Steve
Hawes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Steve Hawes, Deputy Real Estate Commissioner. We do support A. and Gross Senate Bill 804 in answer to some of the committee's questions, if I might, rather than giving you testimony. This particular last two years has been a significant, we've had a significant problem in the real estate division with the theft of entrusted funds. I'll give you some examples. In a case known as Remco out of the Portland area, within the last 2 years, we have a receivership. The loss of clients' funds amounted to $288,000. As a receiver, we've recovered about 16 cents on that dollar. We currently have a lawsuit pending for another 40 cents on the dollar. The clients, in any event, stand to lose, as we see it, at least 40 cents on each of those $288,000. A number of other property management cases have also come into play in the recent months. You may have been reading in the papers about one that is expected to go to grand jury with a loss in the neighborhood of $16,000. The commissioner heard a case today in the administrative hearing involving a loss of about $12,000. There are a significant number of losses that have occurred. Let me emphasize that this has been primarily in the property management area because of some problems we found about the time this legislative session convened. We have conducted audits and concentrated in the area, and that's why we see that many and those kinds of losses, I'm afraid. The second thing I'd like to point out is that we're not only dealing with the theft of entrusted funds. I had staff, while this bill was in the Senate side, take a look at recent cases. And by recent cases, I mean within the last 2 years. And essentially, based on the documents we have, and remembering that we don't recover funds, we don't try and secure funds, we have no power to demand that a licensee repay funds. And these are non-theft of entrusted funds cases. These are fraud, deceit, or intentional misrepresentation cases. Out of 68 cases reviewed, we had a total of funds received following judgment of about $70,000. There were, and I'll just go through the numbers with you, there were settlements with no civil action filed in four of those cases, civil litigation in 11, an additional settlement in two more cases, judgments in three cases, those judgments paid. Out of that total amount, just in this one section that we looked at, of judgments,